and welcome. I'm Michelle Marchant Johnson, and I'm your host of the Man Panel. I'm so thrilled and excited that you're here with us as we are learning more and understanding more about what's going on in the hearts and minds of men. And I have with me here today a first-time guest. I'm really excited to interview him and have him be a part of this event, and that is the wonderful Kyle Benson. Welcome, Kyle.
Thanks for having me.
So happy to have you here. So Kyle, I'm sure many of the women here are familiar with you and your work, but we'll do a little formal introduction just in case, and then we'll jump right in.
Perfect.
So Kyle Benson is an intentional intimate relationship coach, providing practical research-based tools to build long-lasting relationships. He is best known for his compassion and non-judgmental style and his capacity to see the root problem. And our topic today is going to be on authentic attraction, how to use your values and needs to find Mr. Right. So I'm sure that sounds really great to so many women out there listening, Kyle. So first, before we jump into the main piece here, can you tell me a little bit about why you chose this specific topic and give us an idea of where we're going to go today?
Yeah, so I chose this topic because I think when it comes to dating, a lot of the advice out there is not very helpful. Some of it tells particularly women to withhold their needs, to kind of play a game almost in terms of trying to get attraction. And I think that can be helpful to some extent, but often what it leads to is people withholding their needs, not being honest, not being authentic. And then they end up in this relationship 6 months, 9 months later, where they have a partner who was used to the type of person they were presenting as or acting as at the dating phase, and then the real them kind of shows up later and the relationship starts to fall apart. And so what I do is I take the research from couples' relationships. So I actually work in a love lab where we have couples come in and we analyze how they interact and all this information we have about what makes a marriage or a relationship really successful. And what I found is it's the values that couples really have, you know, shared values, their willingness to engage in issues, their willingness to grow together, and really an honoring and acceptance of each other's needs and knowing how to work with that. And so I take that and apply that to dating rather than being like, oh, you have to behave this way, you must be saying these things, which I tend to find gets more people into trouble.
Mm-hmm. So give us an example of what that might look like, a woman withholding her values.
So let's say
her needs, I think, is what you said.
Yeah. So an example would be a woman who is really attracted to a guy, wants to go out on multiple dates with him. He is unresponsive text message wise, kind of disappears for a few days, sometimes weeks at a time. Then he shows back up. She goes on dates with him, doesn't really address the issue that he's not really responsive or engaging with her. And she's the type of person that wants more connection, wants to talk every day. Not a ton, but still wants to connect and have some closeness there and get to know him. But she's not getting that. And instead of kind of using that value as a litmus test of whether this relationship is something that she wants to be in, she is more focused on, I need this relationship because I don't want to be lonely, or he's really attractive. There's no one else there like him out there. And so I must make this work. But the problem is because she's suppressing her need for connection to maintain this relationship, that's going to become a really big issue years down the line if that relationship continues. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. Because I think we establish oftentimes kind of patterns and set the tone for the rest of the relationship, typically in the earlier stages of the relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's often seemed to me, Kyle, and you can see if you agree with this, that it's hard to kind of switch those dance steps around once a relationship has been kind of established.
It is, because when two people come together, they're creating what we would call a normal, or a therapist, they call it a homeostasis. But it's a normal, like this is how we're interacting. We're creating the culture of our relationship. And then when one partner kind of starts to change to what their more natural state is, and the other partner's so used to this lower bar of needs or expectations, it's going to cause a lot of conflict. But I think you're really wise when you say, if you do this early on, you're going to get two things. One, you're going to have a partner who's going to be more alignment with what you want long term. And two, you're going to find out much quicker whether that type of person is willing to have that type of relationship and actually aligns with your values and your needs in a way that's going to actually make you happy down the line. So it is more vulnerable. It leads to more potential rejection, but it also leads to healthy rejection in the sense that you will have a higher possibility with the right types of guys that you meet. Does that make sense?
It does. Now, I think one of the challenges around this, Kyle, and I'm sure you've maybe experienced a lot of this in the work that you do, is that I think a lot of women, and I'm speaking mainly for women because that's who this audience is, are somewhat detached from their needs and maybe even are not as clear as they could be on their values. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's because of, you know, cultural upbringing or socialization or things like that, what they've been taught or what has been modeled for them. But I think that a lot of women out there that are listening might think they are more in touch with their needs and or values than they might actually be. That's what I've found in my work and working with women, because this is actually a place I start with my clients, is helping them to really connect with their needs and their values. So what do you have to say about that? Do you agree? And has that been your experience?
I completely agree. It's kind of like that one thing that drives how we behave and how we interact in the world, but the thing we don't actually explore or understand. It's not really talked about a bunch. It's not something, when we talk about values, we talk about needs, but it's not really explored internally. And we're not really given that space. And so like Brené Brown's new book, Dare to Lead, does a great job of exploring what are your values as a person? There's a lot of newer resources that are diving into this because it's essential and fundamental to kind of understanding yourself. And the better understanding you have of yourself, the happier you'll be in your relationships, because then you can express that to your partners or potential partners and get feedback of whether they will create the type of relationship you want. But I agree, there's so many people who are like, oh, well, I like this and I like this, but their actions don't align with that. And so you might think you have a value, but your behavior is totally different. And when I'm working with clients, I look for alignment between what they say and what they do, because that's going to give us the best indicator of their real core values, even the ones that they're not aware of.
Mm-hmm. So this is giving us a little bit of a glimpse into maybe a gateway of how someone, it gets more clear in terms of their values. It's based on, from what you're saying, it's based on where they're investing their time, what they're putting their attention on, what they're centering their lives around. That's one way to get in touch with values, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So when women are out there looking for men, you know, looking for the right man, looking for someone they can be in partnership with, one of the things that women look for, and I know men look for too, is first of all, attraction. Yes. And we're not saying that's not important, but I think sometimes there's an overemphasis there. Mm-hmm. The second thing I think oftentimes they look for is common interests. And I think common interests can be important too, some shared interests. But I think the biggest piece missing is the common values. And I don't think there's enough emphasis typically put there.
Right. And I agree, right? And there's this idea of, you know, attraction. Oh, I'm super attracted to this person, so we're just going to make it work because we have that attraction. Mm-hmm. That, right, when you focus solely on that, you ignore kind of the deeper things that are going to kind of seep up into the relationship later on. You know, that you might have a super incredible attraction, but if the person is unresponsive when you're hurting or when you're needing their attention, that's going to be troublesome. And then in terms of shared interest, right, the research shows that, yeah, you can have compatibility and shared interest in these things that are really fun, but even those couples who have a lot of shared interest also have issues. You might both enjoy golfing, but when you go golfing, you might just be super competitive and critical of each other. And so while you have shared interest, it doesn't mean the relationship is going to be successful. And what we found, or what's been found in the research for couples, is it's not necessarily what the issue is, but how the couple engages the issue, how they talk about it. And that goes back to values, right? How do both partners show up when an issue arises? Does one partner avoid and dismiss and pretend to minimize it? Or do they kind of own up and take responsibility for their part, even if it's just a small piece, and work with you to try to figure out what went wrong and how you two can make it better together. Right. And so that's a value of growth, a value of willing to look at things and take ownership. Another thing is value of family, right? If you want to have kids and you're with a partner who is super attractive, super interesting, who you are head over heels for, but they have no desire to have kids, that's going to be hard when it comes time when you're going to be pushing much more for kids. And they're just like, well, no, years ago, I told you I wasn't into that. Why are you keep pushing this? And so that's another indicator of like having those values. And so if you are the type of person who wants a family or is really orientated towards monogamy, you need to look for people who are interested in that and have the honest conversations earlier on to make sure that that person is aligned with those deeper core values. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, one of the challenges I think that often happens too is that we kind of make assumptions in relationships. Like if a relationship is progressing in our minds, you know, I'm speaking for people at large here, and I know we're not all the same, but I think this happens so often. We make assumptions that we're at a certain place in a relationship, or we make an assumption that because we're feeling like we're at a certain place in a relationship, that there's a certain level of commitment or a certain understanding, oftentimes without ever having those conversations you're talking about.
And that's what I think, like with my single clients, what I do is I have them have those conversations and have those conversations. And there's a great book that just came out called 8 Dates by Dr. John and Julie Gottman. And so they're the ones that used all the research from the Love Lab years ago. And what they did is they had these couples, you know, couples who were dating, couples who have been married for decades, go on these dates and give them feedback of what worked, what didn't. And the dates range from topics about conflict, topics about intimacy and sex, topics about money. And you start to get a picture of what your partner values. But like you said, most people don't have those conversations. They don't get curious. They just assume, well, we're kind of having fun together. Things are great. And so it'll work out. Or my partner's kind of distant right now, but if I get married or if we have a kid, then they'll change and everything will be great. Right, that idealization is not going to work. And often those are the types of people who go to couples counseling or later separate. And it's because they were not aware or did not receive the education to have those deeper conversations during that dating phase and using that time to go, is this the type of person I want to commit to? Not only just because I'm having fun and enjoy our connection, but do they also have the values to have a long-term relationship that are mostly in alignment with the values I have?
Yeah, so why is this so important? I mean, what, there's going to be conflict or there's going to be frustration, or maybe a woman's going to try to change a man or change his mind. But why else is this so important? Why is shared shared values so important in a relationship?
It creates an extra layer of meaning to a relationship. When you guys are on that same page, when you guys are connected at that deeper level, it makes a much more meaningful marriage or relationship. And so it makes it easier too, because the reality is just like you said, you're going to have conflict. In fact, 69% of conflict in every relationship is unsolvable. But the key difference is, how do you navigate those things? And sometimes those issues will be due to value differences. But again, if you have the value of us working together, of us trying to figure it out together, that's going to be much easier to navigate down the line. And like the couples who came in, they'll come in, they'll have an issue and they'll talk about finances or sex or intimacy. And then 5 years later, it'll be like, it's only been 5 minutes. They'll have the same conversation, the same type of thing. But the difference between couples who have really happy marriages or happy relationships versus the ones that the things start to turn into a disaster is really how they start to talk about this, how they engage each other, and how they really accept each other as unique partners with slightly different values, but fundamentally they have these shared values that keep them binded and bonded together, that helps them go through time together as kind of a unit, if that makes sense.
So you caught my attention a lot there when you said 69% of the issues are unsolvable. So say a little more about that.
Yeah, so out of in the Love Lab, the research that's been done, about 3,000 couples, one of the statistics that showed up is these 69% of the problems are unsolvable. And what's interesting in that is that is in every relationship, whether that's a happy or an unhappy relationship. And so that is because of personality differences between partners, deeper core values that partners feel they can't let go because it would be losing an aspect of themselves. And so they're not as flexible on working towards things, right? Like a solvable problem would be like household chores. Okay, one person takes this and I take this, done. The topic never comes up again. But something like money, right? If one person has a belief system of being a saver and the other person has a belief system of being a spender, well, that's going to be an ongoing issue that's going to continue to come up. And the couple needs to be able to negotiate and work together to make sure both partners feel understood, feel respected, and can work together to make it work. Otherwise, that problem becomes what we call gridlocked, where partners feel like they're butting heads, and if it doesn't get resolved or if it doesn't soften and get them to connect, then their relationship heads towards separation or lonely isolation, even in partnership.
Mm-hmm. So if I understood you, the reason 69% of these problems are unsolvable is because they're rooted in actual personality traits that are not going to change.
Right. It's personality, it's values, it's very deep dreams that people don't want to give up. You know, it's a relationship. It's two people with different personalities, different family histories, different experiences in life colliding to build this one thing called the relationship. And so there's bound to be issues. And so that's where that comes from. And the key is, again, it's not right. When there's a relationship problem, there's a therapist who says there's actually two problems. It's the actual problem and how you talk about the problem or how you navigate the problem. And the thing that we've seen in the research is it's not necessarily the problem that is the problem, but how you deal with the problem that determines whether your relationship is successful or unsuccessful.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's very interesting. Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. So I want to come back to this whole needs piece again for a minute. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you something, because I know for a lot of women, especially women that have out of necessity or by choice become very independent and self-sufficient, which is many people in our audience here, it becomes challenging, or it feels challenging for them to sometimes, first of all, be in touch with their needs, which we already touched on, but second of all, to express their needs or to ask for what they want or need, because it makes them think that the man will perceive them as needy, or they might feel needy. And I think there's a big distinction between needs and being needy, but I wonder what you have to say about that.
Well, I think there's different approaches to that. There's an attachment theory that kind of talk about how you're only as needy as your unmet needs. And so if you understand your needs and you understand how to make requests to give your partner the opportunity to meet your needs, and know how to do that well, you will be able to have a much better relationship. But if you demand your partner to meet your needs, if you demand loyalty, if you demand that they meet your needs, that's again where we go back to that conflict of how you're approaching it makes the issue worse. But in terms of talking about needs and this fear of bringing that to the table, that's something where I agree with you, a lot of people struggle with. And there's a sense that, well, if I express what I need, then this person might reject me, they might leave me. And that is actually really true. And the other side of the coin is they might actually meet your needs. And you might actually have that relationship where you get to be authentically yourself and they get to be authentically yourself themselves, and you get to work together to meet each other's needs. And so imagine if you had this type of relationship where you withheld most of your needs, and then 5-10 years down the road, you feel resentment because your partner has never met those needs. And so really, I call this a choice point. You have a choice to either express your needs and see early on if you have a partner who's willing to meet those needs, or not express those needs and hope to goodness that sometime down the line that your partner will meet your needs. And so I personally think the cost of waiting, of not being vulnerable, of not taking the risk earlier on, leads to more trouble down the line. And so again, it's a pros and cons kind of thing that a lot of people try to weigh. But if we're looking at it from a research perspective, I think Brené Brown talks about it really well, right? You need to be vulnerable and express it. And it's not to like pour your heart out and say, here's everything I need, but kind of experiment with how willing your partner is and do little tests. Not test is not a good word, but experiments to see if they're going to be open to engaging and respecting those needs. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So coming back to the example you gave at the first part of our conversation here of the woman where the man, she's going out with the man, and then he fades away for a few weeks, and then he comes back and asks her out again, and she's not saying anything, but she's feeling disappointed or frustrated that he's not in contact more frequently. What might that look like? What might she say? How might she express that need? I'm wondering if you can model what that might sound like for us.
Yeah. So, I mean, if the first time that happens, and I would just have her be straight up and just say, hey, like, you know, we were talking for a little bit and you seemed to disappear for 2 weeks. Like, what happened? Are you okay? Like, even just asking that kind of can see what that partner does. That partner might say, oh, one of my family members died, so I had to go take care of that. You know, and again, there might be an emergency situation that happened, or they might be like, no, that's how I text. And you start to get evidence of their own style. Another thing that happens is sometimes these partners, you might bring that up and say, hey, like, what happened? And they'll say, oh no, nothing was wrong. And they'll kind of like make you feel reassured, but then they'll repeat the pattern later. And so at that point I would address it and say, hey, like, this has happened again. I'm a little bit confused, right? You tell me you're committed to the relationship, but then you disappear for it. My experience is you kind of disappear for a little bit. And I'm kind of lost of like whether you're in this relationship with me or not. And like, again, it's just being very direct and clear, trying to understand whether that partner is a part of the relationship or not. And not necessarily in a critical way, but more in a curious way that makes the person more willing to open up. And the key thing when you're asking these types of questions is not only to look at the verbal answer, but look at the behavioral answer, right? Because a lot of people will say, oh, everything's great. No, I love you. I care about you. But their behavior says something different. And again, you want to see that alignment of their values, because it's very easy to say, no, I'm here, I'm committed to the relationship. But if the behaviors don't align with that, that's an indicator that they're not in integrity with what they're saying. And it's really important for you to find someone who's in integrity, who does what they say they do, because that's the foundation of trust. And every relationship that is successful needs trust to work well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so part of what we're saying here, if I'm hearing you right, is we're also, yes, we're hearing the words, but we're making sure the actions are congruent with the words, and we're looking for patterns over a period of time. Because I think anyone can have like an off moment, an off day, maybe an off week. And I'm not a typically, you know, it's something egregious maybe, but I'm typically not a one strike and you're out kind of a person. I'm looking more for patterns over a period of time to see how they're really showing up over a period of time. And this is also something for us to check about ourselves. If we're showing up in congruence with what we say is important to us and with what we say are our values.
Mm-hmm. And that's important too. And so kind of to address the first point again, right? You can do a one strike rule, but that doesn't give that person a bunch of space to actually engage, right? And so I usually do a three strike rule, right? Test and experiment and see how they respond to it by being very open and vulnerable and direct, and see what they do. If it happens again, do it again. If it happens again, well, that's kind of an indicator that this is a pattern that's showing up and it might not be a good relationship for you. And on the flip side, if you're going to hold this person to that level of accountability, you better be doing the same thing on your end. You better be the type of partner who, if you want someone who's available and responsive, and yet you text them and you tell them that, but yet when they text you, you wait 12 hours or wait 3 days, that's going to be problematic. So you really have to be in alignment with, what do I want? What works for me? And when you have that honesty and actually look at yourself from a realistic perspective, you can find partners who are much more fit for you. Even if you're the type of person who doesn't like a ton of closeness. I know there's some couples who live in different states and they somehow make it work, but they're comfortable and they found a way to make it work because they're both on the same page. They have less of a need for closeness and their values are more professional than it is for the relationship. And so again, it's by honoring and being congruent with kind of how you show up in the relationship is going to give you a much higher chance of finding the right partner who's going to make you happy down the line. And so it's both. It's looking for congruence with them and also looking in the mirror and saying, am I the type of partner that says what I do? Do I show up when I say I'm going to show up? And am I straightforward and direct about what I need? So that's how I see it. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that was very well said. Thank you. So I want to ask you another question, a little more personal question, if I can, Kyle. And that is, I took a few minutes and read a little bit about your personal story on your website and found it to be interesting. And I just wonder if you'd be willing to share a little bit about your own journey, how you kind of found your way to this work, just because I feel like it can help other people who might be struggling or feeling a little confused right now.
Yeah, so I talk about a lot of this. I do understand a fair amount of the research. The reason I'm obsessed with the research is because I needed the research. I needed the support because I used to be a really anxious, needy, clingy partner. I felt really insecure being alone. When I would try to get my needs met, I was passive about it. I wasn't direct about it. And then I would kind of pursue my partners in really unhealthy ways. Like an example is what we would call protest behavior, where if my partner spends all day doing something and doesn't text me for 8 hours, even if it's a totally normal thing, like it's a work meeting or a conference, I would wait 8 hours to text back, right? That's not very relational. I'm protesting the relationship, but I'm not being direct about what I need or what I'm wanting in the relationship. And so that's what I was. That's how I used to be. And I ended up, because I was that way, I also got involved with romantic partners who were not in alignment with my values. And so our values caused issues in the relationship. I felt really insecure. I didn't get the reassurance that my partner was committed to me. And instead of honoring that and taking it for what it was, I continued to pursue this partner, continued to try to win their approval. And eventually what happened is I got physically ill. I'm really physically ill, and I got an autoimmune disease called psoriasis. And at that point, I really started to question like where my life was going and who I was. And I picked up the book, What Makes Love Last by Dr. John Gottman, who's the guy I work for in the Love Lab, and then a book called Attached by Amir Levine and Rachel Heller. And both those books really spoke to me in terms of how I was hiding my needs, how I wasn't honoring myself, the patterns that were showing up in my relationship. And it kind of just started to create a roadmap of how I needed to get support externally. So I hired a therapist, but also the things I could do to improve my relationships by speaking up about my needs, learning about what my needs were, and then focusing on self-compassion and self-worth. And so it was a big journey that was started with a lot of suffering and pain from my relationships. And so a lot of this that I share on my blog talks a lot about my own suffering and the lessons I've learned, not only with myself, but also with my clients, that can really help improve a relationship over the long term. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for sharing that. I think a lot of us that find our way into this kind of work come from that place of our own pain and the journeys we've gone on to find things that work better, that serve us better.
And I think one of the things that just as a little note, like we're not much different than the other people we work with. You know, we're human beings and we struggle, and we then have focus on understanding the struggle and have more tools to support people who are in the struggle now. And so that's something I think that if you're struggling with this, you know, there's a lot of people who are in this summit who can support you. And I would encourage you to reach out and connect with someone who you connect with, who you feel is aligned with your values, your belief system, and potentially look at working with them to support you on your journey to finding that relationship that you want. Because from my experience, if I didn't have the people who I had in my corner and who I still have in my corner, I would not be where I'm at. And I think we get hurt in relationships, but we also get healed in relationships. And the research shows, again, that's how we really change, is in relationship. And so I just wanted to throw that last little bit out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think relationships are the greatest opportunity for growth and can be such a great source of joy and satisfaction. But it is a big growth. It is a big growth experience when you're in a relationship. I mean, I feel like, you know, for me, I had a very long and winding journey to finding, meeting and attracting my husband. I got married for the first time at age 43. Mm-hmm. And we've been married now for 12 years, but I can tell you it has been the biggest growth journey of my life. It's been amazing. It's been so worth it. It's also been hard at times because it's been the biggest growth journey that I've ever been on. Because I think being in a close, intimate relationship like that is kind of like, you know, we think we see ourselves every day when we look into the mirror. But we don't necessarily see the side view, or for women, heaven forbid, the rear view. And having this other person in your life when you're in an intimate relationship reflects back kind of the best parts of you and the parts of you maybe you'd rather have not have seen.
Yep.
So it's really powerful and quite an adventure.
Right. And I think when we kind of going back to what we talked about earlier, if you can accept that that's how your partner's seeing you, you know, and there's sometimes your partner is perceiving you through their own past experiences. And so it's not completely accurate, but sometimes it is. And to take responsibility of, yeah, you know what, I'm kind of difficult as a romantic partner. There's definitely times I'm difficult with my partner. Even this week, my partner was like, "You're really grouchy right now." And I was like, "You know what? I am. I am really cranky, as I'm stressed out. I'm overwhelmed, and I'll own up to that, right?" And there's other things about that I do in my relationship that irritate my partner, but I take ownership of that, and I try to make it as easy as possible for her, just as she does for me. But it's hard work because you have to be vulnerable enough to say, yeah, you know what? I kind of am a little bit difficult. You know, I kind of have an opportunity to grow here or change or adjust this a little bit, and accept that that's where you're at and commit to kind of becoming a little bit better. And that's hard work and that's vulnerable. But as you said, that growth process, that can be really meaningful. And I think there's this idea of, oh, relationship is all about happiness. And there's also a lot of research out there now about happiness is kind of a trap. Like if that's your metric for a happy relationship or for a relationship, you know, you're going to be in trouble. You want to have joy. You want to have happiness in the relationship, but it's actually meaningful marriages are built by going through kind of struggles together, growing together, going through difficult times and having the great times together too. So it's actually having both. And so I love that you kind of brought that into the conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you so much for sharing some of your own experience and your own story too, because I think it's great to talk about the research and all of those kind of things. But I also think it helps people to kind of hear personal experiences and to know that, you know, if they're having a challenging time, they're not alone out there.
And that's what I think with almost all my clients, that's one of the things, right? They're human. We're all human. And I think knowing that we're not alone in this, I think that's the first step that a lot of people are like, wow, I didn't realize so many other people struggle with this. Mm-hmm. Because there's such a perception that everything else is great because you're not inside the relationships other people have, or you're not experiencing the things other people experience. And so we have these narratives that we create that tend to be false. And a lot of everyone struggles, even the people who I idolize, like John or Julie Gottman, they have their conflicts. And they have to use the tools that they've created. And so again, coming back to, I love that you brought that in, because there's a humanness in all of this, that I think really kind of puts us all on the playing field together and really exploring how do we make our relationships better?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the longer I live, the more I believe, Kyle, that people are doing the best they can for the most part with the tools and the knowledge and understanding that they have available to them. Mm-hmm. However, one of the great things here about this event and for our audience that is engaged here, and I want to compliment them, is that gaining new understanding or new tools or creating a new possibility by something you learn can create a whole new possibility in terms of your experience in relationships. And you and I both have obviously done a lot of our own work to be able to get to the point that we're at. That doesn't mean we've arrived. It just means we're maybe a little further down the on the journey, down the path. But I just think it's really valuable for people to continually be dedicated to their own growth and their own learning, because it can open up a whole new possibility.
Yeah, I would just love to reiterate one thing that you said that was so important. You talked about learning and taking this information, but then also engaging in it, right? Taking action. There's a lot, you know, I really encourage you, if you're watching this summit, not to be an insight chaser, but also an action taker, right? It's helpful to get new knowledge, but if you don't integrate that, if you don't experiment, if you don't test out this stuff, you're going to kind of stay stuck. And there's a lot of people who read a ton of relationship books, but not giving that support, not experimenting with this stuff doesn't move you any farther, right? You might have all the knowledge about it, but if you're not doing anything action-wise, you're going to stay stuck. And so I would really encourage you to take that in and really kind of hear what we're talking about today.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Kyle. I really appreciate that. And I really appreciate everything you've shared. You've been really generous. And I know you also have this wonderful free gift. And I would love for you to share a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it's an ebook called Authentic Attraction. And it kind of talks a little bit about honoring your needs, how to engage partners, kind of telltale signs of what to look out for that are red flags, also things that are good, and how to really start to find a partner who's a good fit for you rather than finding someone who is a typical romantic partner, right? You really want to find someone who's unique to you. Who's going to make you happy, who's going to work with your needs, who's going to be engaged, and all the stuff we talked about. And so it kind of just summarizes this in more detail. So, yeah.
Well, that sounds great. Thank you so much for offering that. And for everyone listening, you can get that by clicking on the link right below this video or audio that you're watching or listening from. And I know we've just barely touched the surface here of what Kyle has to share, and I'm sure you're going to want to stay in touch with him. So be sure to get that free gift by clicking on the link below. And Kyle, I really want to thank you once again for your contribution and support and for being here and for all you've offered today. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm glad you're putting this on, because I think a lot of people need more tools and resources and just knowing that they're not alone in this. And so I'm really grateful for you inviting me to this and hosting such a wonderful event.
Thank you so much. Yeah, this event has been really popular with the ladies, this man panel event. And I think it's really valuable for us as women, myself included, to hear so much from the male perspective. So we really appreciate that. And ladies, we're so grateful you joined us. And Kyle and I are both sending you all the best, lots of love, and hoping you'll join us for more of the Man Panel. Take care and bye-bye for now.